the press conference with the protagonists. We've got the director, Felipe Casals. We've got the actors, Damián Alcázar, Ramón Martínez, and Juan Manuel Bernal. And we've also got the producer, Fernando Gu. And they are anxious to answer your questions. So therefore, first question, please. Here in the front, on the third row, it seems.
Good morning, John Hopewell, Variety. In la película Los Norteamericanos...
The North Americans invade a country which is not their country. They don't get to know the cultural reality of the country, their objectives, and finally, they end up, after being going through a ridiculous situation or being almost ridiculed, they leave. There seem to be parallelisms with a more recent invasion of another country, North America. By North America, I'm not sure whether the director would accept these parallelisms. Obviously yes, or obviously no? Obviously yes. And clearing up the following point, that is to say, it's not the first time that Mexico had been invaded, it was the third time that Mexico had been invaded. The first time was in 1847, the second time was in 1914 and 1917 with the punitive expedition, but it's the same phenomenon that has taken place in Granada and in other parts of Latin America and obviously in other parts of the world. In this case, it's an episode, a delirious episode, the truth be said, because apart from being an invasion, a senseless and an abrupt invasion, at the same time it's the end of the history of North American cavalry, of the great North American cavalry. After the persecution of Villa, next comes the First World War. The North American cavalry don't exist as such. That's when they realize that it made no sense to have that military deployment that was the glory of the North American Army in the last 70 or 80 years. So therefore, it was a double failure to not bring the head of Villa and to cancel the history of North American cavalry at the same time. Hi, Mr. Casals, I would like to ask you that phrase which says, it's easy to die and it's difficult to die to live with honor. Could we apply this to one culturally, or whether this exists in Mexican cinema but against the North Americans, could that be applied also to that other struggle, the cultural struggle? We're doing that. Yes, that's right. The sentence or the phrase corresponds to a villista, a Villa supporter. You've realized that the film, I imagine, the figure of Villa is merely quite tangential. You can hardly see him. What we're interested in is to talk about Villism, or what Villismo means in the terms of loyalty. A revolutionary cause not necessarily is the main character, but what his cause represents, be it Zapatism, be it Gandhiism or Mandalism. That is to say, end of the day, there are many, many names, revolutionary causes, many shapes. And in this occasion, the main character of the film, Chico Grande, textually says the following: dying is easy, the difficult thing is to live with honor, or honorably. And to live honorably is to fulfill and comply with a principle of loyalty. And that term loyalty is the embryo and and the backbone of the entire film. I see and I hear that term not said too much nowadays, not only in Mexico, but in many countries. I ask, who's loyal to what and to who? So therefore, it can be applied to culture as well. I'm sorry, we can't hear. I would like to say, you've made a Western in Mexico, and secondly, you've made this film thinking about that Villa still has something to tell us to the Mexican public or the audience, or not like their directors who say, we've got to talk more about the Civil War, or you've only used Villa as a pretext to criticize the current day situation. To the actor, I was impressed by the way by your performance. I would like to know what method you've used to portray your character. No, Villa can never be a pretext, and he neither Zapata nor a revolutionary chief. He's an off-the-side figure here. What's important here, the truth be said, is who believe in Villa and why? What reason do they believe in Villismo or in the way he thinks? They believe in them because when one loses everyone's rights, one loses one's rights, all of one's rights for generations, and when social justice does not exist, and there's no pretext at all. Nowadays, 110 million inhabitants, there are 40 million inhabitants in Mexico who don't eat twice a day, for example. So therefore, Villa continues to be right. Zapata continues to be right. I'm not using any pretext at all. I'm only putting on the table the term loyalty to the revolutionary principles. That's all I'm saying. And the actors, I can't answer what the actors and the method they've used for their performances. Hi, good morning. I'm Daniel, and I interpret, I play Butch Fenton. As regards to the interpreting or performing or portraying the role of a North American, my mother was English. I was born, brought up speaking English. I don't speak, unfortunately, with an English accent. I studied as an actor. Part of the training was in the U.S. Part of my training was in English. At the beginning of my career, I did a lot of films in English for the U.S. and for other countries of the world, films that were made and shot in English. So therefore, that part, the idiosyncrasy of my character, the ideology, this was something that was far from me. And I think there are characters, when you read the script, you say, this is for you. When I read Chico Grande's script, and especially the character of Butch Fenton, I said, I have to play this role. And as regards to techniques, there were certain things that we had to be very precise in playing the role, like, for example, the accent. We wanted the accent to be Texan, a Texan accent, and especially when the character loses control, we notice it even more, that he comes from the lower echelons, a lower class, horse riding, several months horse riding lessons, and so therefore there were many things that I had to study, the truth be said. But the truth is, there was a lot of empathy with the character, not because that's the way I am, not at all. Well, I think that all of the work is the result of an enormous effort and absolute concentration to make this film. The director, who I consider to be a master of the great directors of Mexico, he's a person who's very strict, and he asks us to give our 100%. And the work was a complete concentration all the time in each and every one of the scenes that we needed for each of the characters. So therefore, it was the time before filming, we had to prepare ourselves in this sense. I had a dialogue coach for my accent. and all of the background work that can be easy, I think, can be seen on the screen. We should not forget that this same story takes place in Arizona, apparently, okay, just in case people don't have that information. The Mexicans are being persecuted in Arizona. They're being hunted as well. Hi. I would like to ask the director whether, as regards to the bicentenary, this film is celebrating or regretting the bicentenary. No. The film doesn't admit any historical truths. It doesn't admit any truth of the victors, or the winners. The Mexican Revolution is an effect which was achieved by two great losers, Emiliano Zapata and Francisco Villa. The winners in the Mexican Revolution are not neither the initiators of the revolution, neither or nor what backs up the idea of the revolution. So therefore it seems to me that it's quite possible and logical and acceptable that in the festivities of the bicentenary and the centenary, there should be a film which has a critical point of view and a different critical point of view. We're talking here about the result of belonging to a revolutionary cause, which obliges, in some cases, to turn into yourself into an anonymous hero, which are the true heroes at the end of the day, in exchange for nothing. And within the Western genre that you mentioned a moment ago, which is not being used too much nowadays, I don't agree with you, by the way. There aren't any genres which are not being used or in disuse. One of the elementary proposals of Westerns as a genre is that the action defines the man. And no better than to tell the story of Chico Grande than the genre of a Western, because it's the action of loyalty which defines the main character, which is played by Damián Alcázar.
Animo.
Go ahead, I encourage you. Front line, please.
Hola, buenos.
Hi, good morning. More than a question, it's just a remark. I'm not up to date with the history of Mexico, and this film was a bit more universal. I see it more than a cowboy film, I see it as a religious film. These characters could be martyrs, and the God that they defend is, and they're prepared to die for this God, and everyone believes, you've got your fanatics, which are the bad guys in this case, their faith isn't that pure, and those that manage to die honorably because they believe honorably and loyally, I don't agree with what you're saying. There's nothing religious at all in the film. God free me from having anything religious in the film. And there are no acts of faith. There are revolutionary principles that sustain themselves. They say when one has spent one's whole life, or three generations behind him, living and being flogged all the time, and without being able to eat, and someone comes along and says, leave all this and come with me, like the Messiah, and we're going to free. There's no religious act there. There's an act of justice. That's what I see. On the other hand, I don't agree with the fact either that there's a martyr or eulogy. There's a will of complying with the word that you've given, being true to your word nowadays, and the world we live in, at least in other latitudes, and it's This is a habit which has been lost. That is to say, being true to your word. So it's a film of being true to one's word. But on the other hand, there are different criteria that the North American characters are completely opposed and different. One comes from the east of the United States who doesn't understand a single word or doesn't understand the army, and he hates Mexico, who's formed and trained in the most strict WASP criteria of the beginning of the 20th century, which is honorability, being honorable, the decency of the North Americans. And he thinks, everything that's taking place there, he has to hush it because of the honor, or to honor his uniform and the army, but he doesn't understand a thing about what's taking place there in Mexico. We must remember that almost always what's taken place in our Latin American countries is that the North Americans never come to understand why, being so generous with us, we always pay them so poorly. And that's what I'm trying to show in the film. And this story in the head of Villa, the truth is that Villa didn't have to attack Columbus, and neither should he send Woodrow Wilson send 7,000 men to invade Mexico. It's completely nonsensical in a significant historical moment. This is the first world social revolution of which the North Americans never got to understand or found out about. I'm not too sure what that answers your question. The film, I thought, had a lot of personality, and that's you created those sequences, those scenes. But as regards to the character, the main character of the film, I would like to ask him, it's not that I'm stating this, but there are other certain influences of Clint Eastwood films as regards to your character, who's a great hero, but at the end of the day he's a loser, but more than a loser. He's not your Hollywood typical North American hero. It's another type of hero. For example, there's a certain brotherhood with Clint Eastwood's film making, the Westerns. Well, I wish that were the case, and I could have some creative relationship with Clint Eastwood, and that is a great tribute to would be a great tribute to me. What happens here is that in a certain way the ending is a bit just like the punitive expedition. It's a bit of a waste of time. That is it to find a North American troops that has been totally overtaken by this leader, by three dwarf prostitutes, against his enemy who's died, and he's hanging off his horse, almost dying, and you can't do anything against him. And he, in turn, is ridicule itself for the expedition. The construction of the script, the film script, I always thought about an ending that doesn't appear in the film at the end of the day, which is the following. The North American doctor, if you'll allow me to use this as an assumption, he returned to the United States, and he tells the family that he saved Pancho Villa, and everybody would say to him, you're crazy. No, I went to a cave and I saved Villa. I healed him from a knee injury. And everyone would say, please, and that we left that to one side. Butch Fenton went to the First World War with Pershing and never mentioned the episode of the three dwarf prostitutes. The only thing that was left is our oral literature, our Mexican legends that tell that Chico Grande gave his life to save Pancho Villa. That's as simple as that. So if the hero seems, well, I don't know. Well, I don't know about that. there's a certain irony in all of this, I think. Hi, good morning. I would like to ask you about the fantastic the landscapes that you filmed in, where you made a film. It's the epicenter of Western films, Durango. I think that you filmed some of the most prestigious Westerns by John Wayne, for example. Films like, obviously, other noticeable Westerns by second Sam Peckinpah, and or some others, and even French and European films. Durango is specifically excellent from a landscape point of view for shooting on location for the layout of a Western film. In the intelligence, though, that in this case that we're talking about a Western which is almost Transylvanian, because we didn't look for the sun. The photographer who's sitting down here, who didn't want to sit down here with us, he was the head of photography. He did some excellent work for this Western to have a presence, almost a mineral, very earthy presence, which corresponds to the intention of the film itself. Yes, I would also like to say a comparison, but excuse me, the character of Major Fenton, and so it reminded me slightly of the character of Hans Landa. Hans Landa in Inglourious Basterds, because of his hard-headedness and so on and so forth. I would like to know what you think of this comparison that's good to me. And then Daniel Martinez, did you see yourself in the mirror with what you look like at the end of the film? I've never seen myself so good-looking, so handsome in life. Sometimes, and this was said to me in Mexico when the film was premiered in Mexico, I had not seen Inglourious Basterds until after Chico Grande was premiered. I think that it's a great performance by this actor in Inglourious Basterds, but I think that there are quite a lot of different nuances from my point of view. Butch Fenton maintains a certain, a very straight line, shall we say, throughout the entire film. And in Inglourious Basterds, the other actor allows to play around a bit, sometimes where he is impassive, and there are moments in which he's telling jokes and seducing, something that Major Butch Fenton would never allow himself to do. But they're two bad guys that are quite emblematic in very different films. And as regards to the characterization of when I get my hair cut, that was quite interesting to see how the audiences have reacted. Like, for example, in Durango, every time we showed it in Durango in Mexico, and every time Fenton, with his haircut and everything, and his mustache cut, everybody laughed, and it was a type of revenge. And in other places, they laugh at the beginning, and then they don't. So therefore, it's quite interesting to see the reaction of the audience. I would like to say that I want Damien Alcázar to say a few things. It's so clear that I don't have anything to say. I have a question as regards to two Apache guides. I'm over here. The two Apaches, why did you choose two Apaches? What sense does this make? Is it just symbolic? Or we know that the American cavalry had Apache guides, and they were the ones that captured Geronimo, etc. But was this specifically in the text? Or does it have any symbolic value of using Apaches? In military West Point literature, which historically analyzes the entire punitive expedition, Pershing, from the outset, came to the conclusion that the Chihuahua Sierra, which isn't the one in Durango where the film is shot, but the one in Chihuahua, to a certain extent, cannot be overcome. And they're going to need, there's no discussion at all about this, they're going to need these Apache scouts, not only because they may have some sort of relationship with the Mexicans, but so that they can follow they as a North American army or military integrated in small units. We're never going to be able to discover, because they know perfectly well that Villa at that time operates as a guerrilla. And guerrilla warfare, we have to find it, they had to try to find him by using these scouts. So therefore the presence of the Apache scouts is absolutely real and true, and that was the case. And that's how Pershing decided to use them. Any further questions? Yes? Hi. The film has been premiered in Mexico, and I would like to know what have been the reactions of the film in Mexico. The film was premiered in Mexico with a result which is an average result in the capital city, and with very good takings, shall we say, in the box office in provinces. The critics have been very satisfactory. No, the critics have been quite satisfactory, but if we'd have to enter another subject, which is that of the distribution of Mexican cinema in our own movie theaters in Mexico, and that's a big problem. That's another issue. We could take a long time to try to explain the whys and whereabouts of the shameful situation that we are involved in at this present moment in Mexico. 96.4% of the screens belong to the North American cinema. So it's very difficult to find a way out. A significant way out, and at the same time it's difficult to stay on the screen because the dates and the circulation of the North American films are covered almost 54 weeks a year. But I repeat that these are two different problems. Yes, because the audience in general liked the film. We who are on the screen, we receive all the remarks, Twitter and Facebook, they believe it's an extraordinary film, but the audience doesn't have access to it because they take them off the screens very quickly, so therefore they didn't get a chance to see the film. Well, the people that exhibit the film have got other commitments and way ahead of schedule. They've got a schedule way ahead of time. Excuse me. Hi, good afternoon. Precisely talking about the audience, when you weren't a film director, what impression was caused to you by another two films upon the Villista, La Els, La Cucaracha y Vámonos con Pancho Villa? The second, Vámonos con Pancho Villa, along with El Compadre Mendoza, these are two films which are the most important films in the history of Mexican cinema. And upon these is what we've based all of the structure of the history of Mexican cinema. These are two capital works by Fernando de Fuentes, and by the way, it failed in the box office. These were shot in the 1930s. And as regards to La Cucaracha, precisely, it's the other extreme. And it is the cinema of the Mexican Revolution seen through the eyes of the commonplace folklore of historical truth and the truth of the free textbooks. I think that it's abominable. Any further questions? Is everyone satisfied? Yes, in the front row.
Bueno, felicidades.
Congratulations to all of you. And another question for Felipe Casals, or for any of the actors. Films like La Cucaracha have influenced the way in we Mexicans see how and contemplate our history, and also as regards to commemorations. What role do you think cinema has played in our relationship with our past? Which way? Was it negative or not? I think it has transformed, deformed the history, better said, of Mexico, and the very little information that spectators or viewers had as regards to the true vision of Mexican cinema. If we take films that I would call emblematic films in the good sense of the word, like Red Mexico, for example, and his people, who demythify all of the other Mexican cinema, which is profitable for producers because it's they're built like a stew with songs, with characters, and with very loud-sounding sentences, and with patriotic effects, and all of these cheap sauce that apparently makes the popular class very enthusiastic about it, which isn't true, by the way. I don't think that the popular classes believe this. I don't think that the great majority of these films, none of them, are very negative for the history of Mexican cinema and the history of Mexico. Most of the films that have to do with the phenomenon of the revolution, there's practically no point of view which is critical of the director or the author. So therefore, in absence of all of this, they replace it with a sort of mixture of things to complement the taste of the viewers, and this for a long period of time turned into films that represented the film of the movies of the Mexican Revolution. La Generala, for example, is one of them, and there's an enormous amount of titles. Miguel Zacarias also, several films of this nature. El Sujeto y La Soldadera. These are two things that have nothing to do with all of these funny anecdotes, quote-unquote, of what Villa did. Villa was more transcendental. Zapata, they don't get delved into Zapata, apart from Elia Kazan, who did it, gave us a favor. His wife showed him to read when she got married, and that's what saved him. Hi, I would like to ask you about the treatment of the language, which I think is very interesting, because I think you're seeing how the Mexican people express themselves. They say that they're able, with one word, to give an entire discourse, and all the contrary, they say to fill paragraphs and paragraphs and to say very little. And I also like to ask you whether it was possible or whether this is a poetic license that you've taken to communicate the North Americans in English with the Mexicans in Spanish, whether that was possible, each in their own language. Well, the first thing, let's give merit to Ricardo Garibay, the author of the Chico Grande story, and the author of a lot of short stories and novels. Ricardo had the control of dialogue and language of the idiomatic expressions, like very other few Mexican authors, and this can be appreciated and noticeable in all his literary works. And the very few occasions in which he worked as a script writer in good, better, or worse films, his work as a dialogist is noticeable. I conserved from the story, I maintained a lot of the dialogues that Ricardo had written in the novel itself. He's got the merit of those idiomatic expressions, which are quite significant. For example, in the north of the Republic of Mexico, people understand them perfectly because they continue to be used. They're not in disuse. They've not fallen into disuse. That is, as regards to the second issue, my producers, when I said to them that we were not going to carry out two versions, that for the gringos speaking in English and for the gringos speaking in a Spanish with an accent. And they said, why? And I said, well, I think it was a convention that we should undertake from the outset. It's either some people speak in English and others speak in Spanish. And it's not so displaced. The Mexican border in 1915 had a considerable amount of North American farmers and livestock owners who had settled in Mexico. The rest opposed them, and they opposed themselves to the North American invasion as well. And the people who worked with them, foremen and workers and so on, they understood English because they had been settled there for, they'd settled there for many, many years. So therefore, the freedom that I take is based upon, has a real or a true basis to a certain extent. And on the other hand, I'm not uncomfortable with the fact that he speaks in English and I understand it and I can speak in Spanish. I think in this time of globalization, everything can be used. It's all valid. Last question, please. Yes, as regards to what my colleague and your compatriot said, there are excellent directors in Mexico. I'm not too sure why there's a problem with the cinemas, because at an international level you're getting a lot of success. But I remember in those times, almost revolutionary times for us, there was a Mexican director, Emilio Fernandez, who was an actor who was North American, but he was one of our great stars. And that director for you, is he the great director in which you based your work, or perhaps you don't agree with Lindio Fernandez's work? No. I consider him, in some films, as a very comprehensive and excellent director in the case of Mexico. But the most prestigious films that he made, on the contrary, are not the ones that most seduce me. What I do admit is that there is an emotional burden which is necessary now nowadays that he had in his films, and which is necessary to have in Mexican contemporary cinema. It's quite obvious that the naturalism and the immediatism of Lindio Fernandez generated something which was quite necessary in the cinema, which is this impact which captivates the viewer and the audience and transmits an emotion directly. But apart from this, he has two or three films which are absolutely excellent. One of them, which is called Salón México, I'm not too sure whether you know that film, which is an excellent film. But like all Mexican directors, some are good, some are bad, some are made to pay the rent and so on and so forth. Well, just like a day at the office, it's difficult to make a final list and to give a balanced judgment upon the works in cinema, because the authors depend upon so many circumstances to make a film which are easily foreseeable in a distance but very unforeseeable at a given moment. And things don't turn out sometimes as they should turn out. I would like to say that in Mexico nowadays, the young people are reviewing the film by Fernandez's works, and they're discovering that in Fernandez's works there was something more than the photogenics that Figueroa showed, and that there's an urban work there by Fernandez which is quite esteemed. Salón México, Víctimas del Pecado, which are true jewels, and for my taste, much better with contrasted skies in the background and so on and so forth. So he's studying now the students in all his urban work. Lindio Fernandez, his cinema, it's an urban work, urban cinema. Rural cinema and so on and so forth is very scarce. Rural cinema that we know is research under the formula of a documentary, basically. That's how it's filmed. But as in fiction, there's practically no rural films nowadays, at least in Mexico. Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.